a voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning on WICC 600.
Well, Dr. Brown, actually, some new information that literally just came in minutes ago. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio says he plans to fully open up New York City on July 1st. He actually just made the announcement on MSNBC saying that the city is ready for stores, business offices, theaters to open at full strength. What do you think about that? We got a lot of people in our listening area who go in and out of New York pretty frequently.
Wow. I mean, July 1st is, and all that. We may be good by July 1st.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I got to tell you, a little nervous about it, though. if you can imagine just the amount of people that are actually down there.
Yeah.
And full open means, you know, free for all. I mean, does it mean masks? We recently heard about the CDC now made the recommendation if you're outside and you're around in a smaller group, especially around vaccinated people, then you don't need to wear a mask. Yeah, I don't know. We're all a little gun shy because considering the last, you know, we keep waiting for this to be over. It's been a full year now.
Yeah.
And we know if it's anything like it was last year. Last July, it was by last July we were in quite a bit of a valley. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, even the fact that in a matter of days, you know, this weekend, we drop our outdoor mask mandate. We start to open bars back up. This is something that we've been long awaiting for, but this is big. I think this is this could be a very big turning point for us.
It could be. And honestly, Melissa, we are seeing a decline in admissions in the hospitals now. So, you know what? Isn't this the beginning of the end? I hope so. Now, remember, and we've talked about this, you know, just because we haven't – actually, there's two things I wanted to talk to you about. One is it's just because we're opening up again doesn't mean that we're not going to have outbreaks of COVID-19.
What do you mean by that, though, Dr. Brown? When you say that, what do you mean?
Yeah, so the concern is, so when you develop herd immunity, that means that the population, it looks at a population, and likelihood that the organism, the virus, will spread is much lower, right? And not only is it much lower, but it's unlikely to be widespread.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're talking about when we talk about pandemic, we're talking about worldwide.
Right.
But that doesn't eliminate sort of what we would call endemic or local outbreaks.
Mm.
So if there's an area of people, let's say a social group, let's say this social group and everyone has decided not to get the vaccine, and then they meet in a group of 50 or 100, then everyone is still very susceptible of getting the infection. So I think we need to be careful. You know, especially if we're in, you know, larger groups, especially in groups that have decided not to get the vaccine, you know, just because they haven't got the vaccine, that means one person in that group could potentially spread it to the 100 people that's there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually, so we call those, you know, outbreaks or clusters that can still occur, just like what happened with the flu.
Sure. Sure. And Dr. Brown of Griffin Health is here, by the way. And, you know, as you talked about, like, for example, hospitalizations, let's touch on that really quickly. I know you said that they're starting to decrease, which, I mean, that's great. I mean, week to week, it just feels like it's been, especially the month of April, it felt like we were starting to see a real uptick in younger people in the hospitals, people
Correct.
Who did not want to get the vaccine. So that's good news this morning. I did have a question, though, because we are starting to notice not so much, I'd say, in Connecticut. It's still somewhat of an issue here. It's more nationwide, but people are talking a lot about returning for your second vaccine. That seems to be an issue for nationwide. And I think here in Connecticut, it's something, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's something like 2% of people are not going back for their second vaccine or didn't reschedule it. For example, like I got a call this morning from a woman who got her vaccine, her Moderna, in January. She has not gotten the second one. Like if you are someone who maybe in the beginning you just couldn't schedule your second vaccine, obviously it's so open now. There are dozens of clinics just doing walk-ups.
Absolutely.
Is it worth going to get that second vaccine, even if it's months after you got the first one?
It really is.
It
I
is.
Would say yes. I mean, that's that additional protection that you're going to get. And the data that just came out related to the effectiveness of it, it sounds like a first vaccine is almost 60% effective.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually a little bit higher than we expected. But it also, that second vaccine puts you in that 95 realm. So if you're one of these people who are concerned, you know, much like I am, because, again, because I see the end results,
right,
you know, then I would say, you know, get that, don't, you know, just get that second vaccine. It'll act as a booster and it'll cover you for the, you know, for the foreseeable future.
Okay, so even though we always say, depending on Moderna or Pfizer, you're talking a 3 or 4 week turnaround or whatever the case may be, even if it's been a couple of months, go get the booster.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, and that second shot is essentially a booster. So your immune system's revved up at the first one. You get the second one, it basically boosts your immune system, so you end up going into that 90%.
Okay.
All right. 95% plus, actually.
Okay. Now, Dr. Brown, I'm curious, you know, J&J came back, which we predicted. We knew that the pause was going to end. Mm-hmm. I know that obviously when you look at the grand scheme of things, this is a very, 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 very small percentage of people who got a blood clot. And it sounds like it's been in the brain for the most part. I still think it's fair if people are a little bit nervous, like we've had people who say, look, we're worried. I get that. What do you think, especially for young women, you know, if they do have the opportunity to go and get a Pfizer or Moderna, would you recommend they do that? Or do you think that this is just so rare that you shouldn't be worried about that?
I believe the latter. I believe this is so rare that I would not worry about it. I mean, there's millions of people who have actually gotten, and we're talking about, you know, we're talking about six patients that actually had this rare complication. And even with that rare complication, how much is that related to sort of all the other environmental things that occur, different medications, different travel? And I think that's what the FDA reviewed and the CDC looked at to make sure that that was the case, that this was a, you know, this was it. I mean, I think it was scary enough that we had to look into it.
Sure.
But I think the pause was a little aggressive personally, and I think it scared a lot of people. But again, it's a very safe vaccine. And I think the opportunity to get the J&J, the Moderna, or the Pfizer, or even some of the, you know, we may be having new vaccines that come out also. Mm-hmm. I think you have the opportunity, if you have the opportunity to get them, I think you should.
Dr. Brown, we did get a question why Griffin Hospital doesn't offer the J&J vaccine. Can I take a stab at this one?
Absolutely.
No pun intended. I imagine, because I know with, first of all, the J&J was really created, I would say, obviously in competition with the others, but J&J was really created to reach the hard to reach populations, and it doesn't have to be left in like a refrigerated temperature and things like that. Aren't the hospitals mostly carrying Pfizer and Moderna, and the J&J is really more for like the hard to reach, the mobile clinics, the pop-up clinics, things like that? Like, you guys never offered the J&J.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
And we did save it for, I mean, and honestly, what we've done at Griffin Hospital is that we try to use what's available, Pfizer, Moderna, and then the J&J, you're exactly right. We wanted to make sure that we had that, so the people that we really need to get that sort of once and done, that we're able to get out to that population and get it to them. And then if we couldn't get them to come back, you know, which is the higher risk or the potential walk-ins, that's what we're using. So we are using that in a lot of our outreach vehicles. We're using that at the we're using that with the federal government's trailer. So we have a FEMA VAM that we've been working with. Those are the ones that were there. We are planning on using it with the you know, until the pause occurred, and then we had to stop and use Moderna and Pfizer.
Okay, so just to clarify for people who think that Griffin is scared of J&J, you're not. That's
we're not scared of J&J, no. Not at all.
Just wanted to make sure.
No, we're actually using it for special populations.
Okay, there you go. All right, great. Now, I wanted to talk to you about some new research I saw, Dr. Brown. So first of all, because I kind of fall in this category, University of Pennsylvania recently, I guess it was new research actually from the Penn Institute of Immunology, excuse me, they found some new research saying that people who recovered from COVID, so people who had COVID, really didn't need the second shot. They didn't need the booster. Now, if you never had COVID, it totally was necessary to get both. But what do you think about the fact that if you've had full-blown COVID before, you've got the antibodies, you only really need the first Pfizer and Moderna, you don't have to go back for the second? What do you think?
I think that's correct, and I think there's enough data that's actually shown that. I mean, there's public policy, and then there's sort of what we've been seeing in the research. That has not been an official recommendation, but there is enough studies that have shown that a first shot in someone who's actually had COVID is it acts as a booster, mm-hmm. and it increases the immune, it accrues the efficacy quite high.
Okay.
So that makes sense both in the studies look like that's been shown, and then it makes sense immunologically. That makes a lot of sense that you get this as sort of as a booster shot. Now, if you get the second shot, it's like another booster.
Mm-hmm.
We found that it's not really going to be harmful to get that second shot. In fact, it may be a little bit helpful, but the amount of increased efficacy is probably not there. But again, that has not been an official recommendation from the CDC. But I can tell you that that's not the only study that's actually come out to say that.
Now, the only thing I will say, Dr. Brown, about this is that all makes sense. But I will say, just from experiencing this firsthand, where I do find the second shot probably helped, because as everyone knows, I had full-blown COVID, like every single symptom under the sun. It was horrific. I went through what we're pretty sure was kind of like what a long hauler would go through when it comes
right.
to like psychological issues. It's
sure.
It's astonishing. I got the second shot. It'll be 2 weeks ago tomorrow. And it, like, all the anxiety, the mood swings, like that has significantly gone away.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And I don't know
Absolutely.
If even though, you know, fine, the first shot is great. I mean, I don't know if you could speak to that at all. Like, if you're someone who thinks you may have gone through long hauling, whether it's the, you know, the psychological, the neurological, maybe even like physical stuff that you've gone through, would you say it's worth getting the second shot just to try and knock that out?
Yes, I would. And there's also data that has shown that also. That there's, you know, people who actually have the long haulers or continued symptoms, much like you're describing, Melissa, they have found that getting the full vaccination does decrease that and can make it go away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been seen throughout the world. It's really interesting data, and we've been following that pretty closely. And yeah, it's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm. And I have one last question, actually, that just came in for you, Dr. Brown. You ready for this one?
Okay.
It's a great question, because I too was on the especially the first shot. I was on Tylenol pretty much around the clock because of my headaches until the 48 hours were up. A question from Sue this morning. If you do take something like Tylenol or Advil before getting the vaccine, how much, if any, does that affect the effectiveness of the vaccine? It doesn't, right?
It really doesn't. It's
okay.
A different mechanism. There has been some... You know, I will tell you that in general, the recommendation is not to take it prior to.
Okay.
You know, and take it symptomatically. So if you end up developing symptoms, I mean, if you're on it because you have a headache and that's sort of life, that's fine. But if you don't have symptoms, I would not recommend taking it. But if you do develop some symptoms after, then yes, it's absolutely fine. It's not going to decrease the efficacy. It's a little bit of a different channel. I know there's been some concern about that, but it doesn't look like it's a big issue.
Yeah, and I will say, kind of to piggyback what Dr. Brown said, was the first shot that I got, for some reason, I think I know exactly the reason. The first shot, I had horrendous headaches, maybe hours after getting the first shot, so the Tylenol was helpful. This second time around, I had literally nothing except for the sore arm, and I think it's because I literally took down a gallon of water. Like, it's amazing
right.
what being hydrated. I don't know why that is, but I took down water. I had no symptoms with the second shot, which was supposed to be worse.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I think hydration, making sure you're getting light exercise, eating right, all those things are really important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people underestimate that. It's so simple, yet it's so important.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. And so if you don't need to take the Tylenol, don't do it, because I didn't this second time around.
Absolutely.
It wasn't necessary.
Absolutely. And Melissa, just so your listeners are aware and everybody's aware now, you know, when we start taking masks off, and this is sort of the second topic I wanted to just bring out there, when we start taking masks off and we start interacting with people, just heads up, we're going to start seeing more infections that are non-COVID. We've had almost a year of non-viral infections.
Right. Flu.
So,
yep. Yeah,
so we're
going to
see
true.
Flu-like illness. We're going to see gastroenteritis again. We're going to see we're going to start seeing
that's
people
true.
With colds.
Allergies.
All that is going
yep.
to occur. So just heads up, it's not all COVID, but it will start. It's already starting to creep up in some of these areas.
That's so true. No, Dr. Brown, I appreciate that. And I'm going to continue to kind of push that just so that people are aware of it, especially once Saturday hits and the outdoor mask mandate goes away. So we'll definitely talk about that more. Dr. Brown, thank you so much for the extra time this morning. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Melissa.
All right.